Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where health junkies get their weekly fix of tips, tools, and techniques to have limitless energy, sharp minds, and fit physiques for life. Hey, health junkies. On this episode of the Health Fix Podcast, I'm interviewing Brandi Gilmore. She's an author and a public speaker who is helping to educate folks on how their own bodies can be their own cure, especially when it comes to chronic illness and pain. After an unexpected event, Brandi found herself disabled and desperately searching for answers. In fact, she ended up going from being bedridden to a wheelchair to a walker to walking. And now she's helping folks understand how their mind and energy can help them to relieve pain and work with chronic illness. So, I'm excited to introduce you to Brandi. We talk a lot about emotions. We talk a lot about how different things in our life can be reframed to help us to relieve pain. But we're also talking about something really cool, how she is using medical thermal imaging to show how she is in real time helping folks relieve their pain. So if you've ever seen thermal imaging, such as heat in the body, she is showing how that reduces while she works with folks to work on their thought process and use their mind to help relieve pain and inflammation in the body. Very cool stuff. And especially if you're like, I don't know, this stuff's kind of woo, check this podcast out. And if you have access to YouTube, you can see the video showing inflammation and then reduced inflammation after she works with someone. Really cool stuff. Let's introduce you to Brandi Gilmore. Hey, Health Junkies. I have Brandi Gilmore on today, and I'm excited to talk about how you can heal yourself. It's a topic that we're starting to get more traction on. Back in the day when, you know, I was talking to folks about it, I'd get that deer in the headlights look. But Brandi has some technology that can show you really what's happening in real time. So cool. We're going to get into that. So Brandi, welcome to the Health Fix Podcast.
Thank you, Janine. It's so wonderful to be here. And I love that you said that. The deer in the headlights look, I absolutely get it. After I healed myself, I thought, people are going to think this is impossible, or how is this, does this even work? And so I love that you said that.
It's a common look that I get even nowadays. I do acupuncture. I do a lot of, you know, coaching folks on healing themselves, mantras, tapping, you know, you name it. And a lot of times when people are like, they're like, I'm going, what are you thinking right now? Tell me what you're thinking, because there's always that look.
You know, it's so funny that was exactly what I figured that, you know, just I would experience. I thought, okay, so after I healed myself, I thought, you know, from wheelchair, walker, cane, being an absolute mess, I thought people are going to think this is impossible. I mean, I was a train wreck, and I would have thought this is ridiculous. I would have never thought that it was possible to heal with my mind. In fact, if somebody told me I could heal with my mind, I probably would have been offended. Like, you think my problem is all in my head? So,
right. And as a doc, like it is that slippery slope where you're like, I really think this could benefit you. I don't want you to think, I feel like I dance around sometimes. I'm like, I don't want you to think that I think it's all in your head, because I mean, it is in a way, but I'm not saying, you know, it's like, oh. Well,
this is how I describe it, though, is actually, and it's not all in the head. So the things that I've seen are on very physical levels, but the way I describe it, kind of just an analogy, is to think about an emotional stroke. You know, if you think about a stroke, somebody can have a stroke in their brain and it can paralyze their body. So we can see there's a brain-body connection. And so when we start to look at it, anything that does happen in our brain can very much affect our physical body. And so, you know, if you have a right brain stroke, it can affect the left side, the left brain stroke can affect the right side. And so I started thinking about, okay, well, what if this is like an emotional stroke, if you will, like emotions impacting the brain that are then in turn affecting the corresponding part of the body. And, you know, something that was interesting, even in that research, and not to get too technical, but, you know, if you think about the homunculus map, where, you know, neuroscientists were able to, brilliant data, where they were able to stimulate different parts of the brain and then notice where it showed up in the body. So they could stimulate like the insular cortex, and then it would make somebody feel like they're going to vomit. And so it's so different parts of the brain do impact different parts of the body. And so, and also when we look at emotions. Research has shown that emotions can make a very physical impact even on the brain. You know, things like PTSD or stress from a car accident can even actually change the shape of the brain. So anyways, but point being is just our emotions can create and mindset can create a very real impact on our physical body.
It's so incredible. You know, at first, I grew up in the Midwest. I sound like probably a broken record to my podcast listeners, but I grew up in the Midwest. You know, it's one of those things where like, you know, even becoming an acupuncturist was a stretch, right? And so thinking like, okay, my emotions can get stored in my body. They can create different things. It's crazy. But yet at the same time, we're all like, do you have stomach, you know, butterflies in your stomach? Are you nervous? And it's like, we get that. Why can't we go to the next level?
Exactly. And so a few things. So when I got better, I thought, okay, I have to show this under medical equipment. That was like, that was my goal was I said, you know, I just have to show people so it works. And technically what I did is after I healed, I thought, you know, let me show people. And the first thing that came to mind was showing people how to release pain.
Yeah.
And so I would show them how to use their mind and they would be able to release their pain. And it was incredible. And there was this one time when I was on stage, and normally on stage, I would take, you know, volunteers from the audience and show them how to use their mind to release their pain. And as I was getting off stage one time, I thought, you know, one of these times, somebody's going to say, that person was fake. They didn't really have neck pain or back pain or whatever. And that would have been me previously, because I would have thought,
yep,
this is impossible. And so that's what really drove me to start even figuring out how to do it under medical equipment to show that it's not mind over matter. It's not pretending like there are real physiological changes taking place.
And I think that is genius, because this is where I've been able to really have a talking point to folks to be like, look, there's this, you know, Joe Dispenza's got his functional MRIs. You know, we've got lots of different things to show folks. What, you know, I see that you have a background as a network engineer. So I'm guessing you were thinking technology right out the gates, like, what could I do? What could I do? Who turned you on to medical thermal imaging? Or did you find it yourself? What brought you to it?
You know, actually, after I got better, I started actually working with this chiropractor, and I was helping people in his office and whatnot. And at the end of me getting better, when I was basically, I had a scan taken of my back. And you could, I mean, the whole thing was like red and white. It was a mess. It was, oh. And so, and that was, you know, gosh, I mean, my injury was 21 years ago now. So, I mean, but I had that done and I didn't even think about it again until years later when I said, you know what, I wonder if this would work, because I didn't know. And part of the reason I didn't know if it would work is that medical thermal imaging, what it does is it checks the heat of the body. And a simple way to think about that is, you know, if somebody has a sprained ankle or an infection, you know, it generates heat, as you know. And medical thermal imaging is able to detect this heat. And what I didn't know at the time is, okay, well, if I show somebody how to release their pain, how soon is that going to affect the heat temperatures of the body? Like, is it going to be like a 1 hour response time to, okay, well, their pain is gone, delay, 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 delay. Oh, look, now you can see it on the scan. Because I didn't want that. I wanted real-time results. Because, you know, when you think about it, let's say neck pain, somebody can always say, well, I turned wrong or I worked out or, you know, and so I wanted real-time results. And so so basically what I did was this, is I reached out to Dr. Hillary Smith, who's advanced medical thermography, and basically asked her to start scanning people while I worked with them using the mind. And what was brilliant is that she set the thermal imaging camera up to take a new image every 1 second.
Oh, wow.
Automatic, right? Every 1 second. So it was just, and then what would happen is then I work with people and you could literally see as their pain went down, it also changed. Now, what was also great is that if I then mentioned and had them go back into the negative mindset, then the pain would come back up and you could see it instantaneously. And while obviously pain not coming up as is great. The wonderful thing is you can see it's not placebo analgesia. You can see it's not just mind over matter. Like it's in real time. They don't, none of this was even told to them. And so that's what's fun is you can see it.
Ah, I love that. I love that. And, you know, having, you know, being a doc that looks at a lot of breast thermography, you know, there is an image where we can see their neck. And so I see, you know, how many people have inflammation in general in their back, along their spine. And so when I saw that you were doing that, I was like, oh, wow, how cool. How cool to be able to be like, look, you've got this on your thermography. Let's move you over to see Brandy and see if we can get rid of that pain that you've been having for forever. So
can I, you know, and actually, by the way, I don't know if I can do a share screen, but if so, I can show you what this looks like.
I think so. Let's see if you
actually I can.
Right okay, here. Perfect.
All right. Does that work? All
yes. Right. Let's do it.
Here we go. So let's do it. So this is actually, I'm just going to grab a medical. I got these published in a medical journal, a few case studies last year. And okay. So if we go grab this right here and basically what these are. So I mentioned, you know, the heat and we'll see, let's see. It takes a second just for the images to show up sometimes. There we go. All right. So this is an image of a woman. This is 22 minutes apart. And she had a 5.5 level of pain. And as you can see, this is all of the pain, the inflammation, and this is 22 minutes later. And so, and I do want to emphasize, I make this look really, really, really easy. Now this one is 47 minutes. And this one is fun because what's fun about this is that this gentleman, after I worked with him and it was 28 minutes and his pain went from a 6 to a 0. And after I worked with him, he said, wow, I'm surprised at that work. I just came from a motivational seminar and a 10-day meditation retreat.
Holy cow. Holy cow. So,
which was great. I didn't know going into that he had just done that, but so it's specific things in the mind. And I always, always want to emphasize, I make this look ridiculously easy. And so it does take an understanding of the mind. And of course we can unpack that even more, but I just want to emphasize the average person isn't probably going to be able to release their own pain in 28 minutes or 20 until you know how to do it. Once that's what's exciting. Sure. This is what I love.
Absolutely.
People do after they heal themselves, they go, oh my gosh, I just released my headaches or I just got rid of my pain or it becomes a thing that you start to learn. It's a skill. But yeah.
I think it's awesome. It's, you know, this day and age, having these skills where we can turn to ourselves and not have to get medication, not have to go, you know, I'm not saying don't see doctors, but I'm saying that so you don't have to figure out how to get to the ER at 3 a.m. when pain sets in, you can neutralize it yourself. I mean, this is huge. So of course, folks are going to be like, Brandy, what are you doing? What are you teaching people? What's happening?
Right.
Of course, we'll talk about your book too, but give us a scoop.
Absolutely. And by the way, what I always tell people to do is I always say, don't avoid your doctors, blow your doctor's mind with what you're capable of with your mind. And that's kind of like the theme because, you know, we want to be responsible with it. And it's also just incredible. I had a woman that I worked with who had a tumor in her throat and she was scheduled for surgery the next day. And she had just had a pre-op MRI. They measured the tumor again. It was 5 millimeters. You could see it protruding. And so they had measured it or, you know, scanned it several times. The day before the surgery, her and I worked. And after we did, it disappeared. And she showed up so she didn't avoid her doctor. She still showed up for surgery the next day. And her ENT was like, I've never seen anything like this in my 30 years of practice. And this is incredible. And so just always see your doctors, blow their mind with what you're capable of. And so
love that. I want people to do that for me. Like come in and blow my mind. I want to see this. Guys, let's do this. So tell us, like, what are you up to? What kind of things are you teaching folks? How do you get started? Give us kind of a good idea, a good look into what you're up to.
Absolutely. So ultimately what I would love is that every single person feels empowered to be able to understand their mind-body connection and heal themselves. You know, when you stop and think about it, It's been written throughout history in every spiritual practice, pretty much in one way or another. I mean, it's even in the Bible where it says a merry heart is a medicine to the body. Ill thoughts will dry the bones. Stress affects the body, and placebo, nocebo. I mean, we can see it in so many ways, how the mind impacts the body. And so what I'm up to is that's ultimately what I would love is everybody to be able to do that themselves. And basically to start, what a person would do is ultimately, I think the first thing is really understanding that we can.
Yeah. Yeah. And believing, because I think there is a level of believing that you have the power. If someone's not in belief, I kind of wondered, have you noticed like you can get some results even if someone's not 100% bought in?
Actually, my thing has always been where I take somebody who is skeptical and I said, okay, let's do it. And
nice.
That's been mine. Because I like to show people, I love to blow people's mind. And so this is what I would say is a few things. Is, you know, if somebody has panic attacks, you know, if they are having anxiety and they start having panic attacks, that's going to happen whether they believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
That can happen. Another way to look at it is, you know, as I was researching and trying to figure out how the mind affected the physical body, there were a few really key insights that were pivotal. One was that people with multiple personality disorder can have different ailments when they're in different personalities. They can have high blood pressure in one and regular in another. They can have asthma, allergies. They can be extremely allergic to something in one personality and not in another. There's even a well-known case of a woman who was blind, medically blind, in some personalities, but not in others.
Wow.
And things like body temperature, heart rate, all of these things that you wouldn't think, oh, well, I'm going to change my body temperature. I'm going to change my heart. Or asthma or allergy, all of the, and they happen. They can happen instantly when a person shifts. And that was something that was really eye-opening to me. Another thing that was really eye-opening is I initially thought when I started researching mind-body healing, I thought of the placebo. And mm-hmm. a lot of people would say, well, it works because of belief. He has a belief it's going to work.
Right.
And so I forced myself to believe I was already healed for a long time, like well over a year, if not longer. You know, I lost track of time during my whole injury, but I was forcing myself and affirmations and chanting. And I mean, all these things that I would have never done previously, but I was doing it. I was all in, and it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And so as I started researching, I eventually came across something called the open label placebo. And it is exactly like it sounds, open label. Both the doctor and the patient both know it's a fake pill and it can still work.
Hmm.
So
wow.
Then I started realizing, well, hey, this isn't all about belief. But I would say that, of course, the more we understand how to use it, the more we can implement it. And by the way, another kind of factor that we can look at when it comes to belief is this. I know me during my injury, I could have really good days, like better days, and I could have really bad days. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen because I believe. That was before I even started looking at the mind. I know people with all kinds of illnesses, rheumatoid arthritis, or, you know, autoimmune conditions, pain, broken leg, this, that, the other. You can have good days, you can have flare-ups, you have bad days. And so it's not because you believe it's going to happen. It just, you wake up and that's how you're feeling or off. And so as we can see, with the same physical issue, we can have a lot of different changes going on. So I would say, again, just pointing to the awareness that there's a lot more than belief that, and belief is a good thing in that when we do believe we can do something, and we know we can, then we'll put more effort towards doing it. And I think that's, of course, pivotal.
Sure, sure. I think, you know, we kind of get a fuel in the fire, right? Once we see a little progress, we see a little more progress. Now it's like, okay, you know, what more can I do? I'm sure you experienced that along the way when you're like, wow, okay, I'm feeling better. Oh, I can do, oh. And you just kind of had a drive, I'm guessing, to just keep going more.
You know, it was a little tricky. It was because I had been doing so. Yes, absolutely. And I got into several years of meditating and like binaural beats and frequencies and hypnosis states and all of these things. And I could get my pain down at times, sometimes, but not always. Mm-hmm. But it didn't work to heal my body. And I had like this other pivotal moment where, you know, because I was laying like in this deep state of relaxation and theta state and delta state and doing all these things. But I had this pivotal moment where a friend called me up because her aunt was passing. And she asked me if I wanted to say, you know, goodbye. And of course I did. So she picked me up and we went over there. And as I was saying goodbye to this woman who I just loved and adored, I also had an epiphany. I mean, she had been in hospice, in and out of consciousness for several months. And I thought, gosh, this is probably what I look like. I mean, I was in this deep state of relaxation. And I thought, well, if this is supposed to be so healing, then why isn't she healing?
Yeah.
And yeah. And that was, so I would say that was the next jarring, because I was chasing. That's why when meditation or relaxation started to decrease my pain a little bit, I was like, all right, 20 hours a day, let's bring it. I'm doing this. Yeah. I mean, you don't need, like when I was sleeping, and I didn't sleep much because I was in a lot of pain, but there was a recording literally going at any point and every point of the day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Huh. Very, I mean, you've got my wheels turning, because I mean, it is fascinating that, you know, pre-death, we do go in and out of different brainwave states. And it's like, huh, something to chew on. Definitely there's something for probably everybody to be like, oh, that is interesting. So, all right, tell us the next step. What did you do next? Like, how did you start working on the pain a little bit more intensively?
Absolutely. So what I did is I said, okay, I need to simplify this and I need to understand it. And I said, okay, how can I see that the mind affects the physical body? Emotions. And I said, okay. And then I was looking at, okay, well, if somebody's embarrassed, their face turns red. We know that. Emojis know that. It's pretty solid. Okay. Anxiety, panic attack. Okay. We can see that. Sexual thought, sexual physical response, different for men and women. There's a response. Mm-hmm. We can see that. And so I thought, well, yeah, I'm going to need a lot more than emotions to heal my body. But then I started looking at things like broken heart syndrome, where somebody can die of a broken heart, or even scared to death. Somebody can be so scared, their heart stops. And interestingly, even current research from Harvard suggests that autoimmune conditions may be caused by stress. And so there's all of this research. And so one thing that I noted from this was that different emotions affect the body differently. You know, mm-hmm. embarrassment is different than panic attack is different than sexual thoughts. So I thought, okay, well, what about all the rest of the emotions that we don't see? What about hurt or anger or abandonment or rejection, or, you know, what are they doing? And interestingly, by the way, last year, the Surgeon General even released a statement regarding loneliness and how it can increase illnesses mm-hmm. like type 2 diabetes and heart disease, all of these things. And so we see the connections everywhere, but what are we going to do about it? And so that's what I started looking at. Now, another thing that was really pivotal was this, as you know, I was good at troubleshooting and I can always look at everything objectively. And I said, well, wait a sec. Aren't there plenty of people who are really stressed, PTSD, trauma, who aren't sick? How does that happen? And people with seemingly less stress are sick. That doesn't make sense. And what I began to put together, it was that it takes a certain combination of emotions. And that is the key. And a simple way to think about it is, you know, if somebody wants to bake a cake and they have flour, you can't bake a cake. You add other ingredients, now you can. Of course, illness is not cake, but the point is certain ingredients. And if you mix up the ingredients, different recipe. And so that, as I started looking at things like multiple personality disorder, I could see how it would be possible for one person, one personality to have one illness and a different personality to have a completely different illness and another one to be healthy and have no documented illnesses. And so that's how I started to look at it.
Wow. So kind of like the recipe for illness is more or less what you're getting at there, and putting the right kind of emotions mixed in to get.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. And kind of to give you one of the, probably the easiest is, well, if we look at for a moment, one is what I call the symptom emotion. And that is the emotion that's connected to the symptom. So simply if somebody's embarrassed and their face turns red, that there's that direct correlation. Now, another ingredient, if you will, is if a person gets into their identity that they're sick, then their body may not want to heal. And so, you know, somebody's been sick for a long period of time. Now they identify as being a sick person. And maybe what happens is either they have one illness after another, or they can't heal it. It's just part of who they are. And so there's just different factors, I call them different factors in the brain, of different categories of emotions. Some others that can be more obvious is if we have extreme fear. So if we mix fear with also other things as well, like the symptom emotion, and we can start to create that, or another one, lack of love, you know, so if we're lacking love, that can, so there's all of these things, but so that's a key component as well. And so it gets a little complex because the line can get miswired. And I can unpack that if you'd like, but I don't want to, I don't want to make it too complex for everybody.
Sure. Sure. No, I think I'm following you for sure. And I think at this point, you know, ultimately what we can think is like, everybody's got a little different flavor onto their recipe of sorts in terms of what they bring.
Yes. And so there's certain, categories and whatnot. And then I would say, as far as miswired, that is also a key component. And a simple way to look at that is like this, is that, you know, some people may have a feeling of pride in hardship. Mm-hmm. What happens is they may want to let go of the hardship, but the pride, it's connected to pride, and people like to hold on to feelings of pride. Or even another thing might be, a person can get love and sympathy linked up, where they feel love connected to sympathy. And so that can create a problem as well. So there's different ways that people can get miswired emotions in the subconscious mind that can also impact the health. So it's like, it's a combination, but that's sure. What I do when I said that under these thermal images, when I said I make it look really easy, as you can see, there are specifics. So I'm always, when I work with somebody to have them get rapid results, I'm always identifying specific things. What is a specific emotion that's like, what are the specific emotions that are affecting them? How is it miswired? What do I need to change, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what's key.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And I'm guessing in your new book, Master Your Mind and Energy to Heal Your Body, you're talking about that too, and giving a little more detail. So we can give folks a little teaser into the book.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Good. So, but this is what excites me is, you know, we used to think that, you know, the 4 minute mile, we used to think that it was impossible for a human being to run a mile in under 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then in the 1950s, a man named Roger Bannister did that. And after he did that, it became a new norm. A bunch of people did it, and it became a new standard. And so we can see belief is part of it. People believing they can. Now, the other part is, of course, skill and being able to do it. Because if you said, hey, Brandy, go run a 4 minute mile, I could not do that right now unless I practiced and understood how and got the mechanics and all of that. Then that would be a different story. But that's the point that I see, is I see people that are healing themselves from things and they go, oh, my gosh, we can do this. And that's what's exciting, is just becoming aware that we can do this. And, you know, we see this research all around us that stress affects the body, and negativity and hurt and, you know, and loneliness and but we can undo it.
Yes. And so it sounds like what you're doing when you work with folks is you're helping them identify what the issue is in terms of the emotion and the recipe of their emotion. And then you go to work on releasing the emotion to release the pain? Is that how it works? Is that the next steps? Or give me a scoop on your process a little bit.
Absolutely. So typically my goal is really to empower people. So I don't typically work with a lot of people. Usually they go through a course or a class or a book or, but basically very simply, I call the overview of the process, the gift method.
Okay.
And step G is about first get new positive mind programming. And that's important to create new positive mind programming. And part of the reason that's so important as a first step is because when a lot of times people hear about this type of healing with the mind, the first thing they want to say is, what is the negative emotion? What are the negative things? And of course, if it's creating pain or illness in your body, you don't want to delve right into it. You'd rather actually lift first. So that's step one, lift and get and build new neural pathways. So step G, and then I identify the specifics. So what specific problems, what specific factors in the mind. Step F is to start freeing yourself from them. And so freeing is about release techniques and also about reprogramming the mind. And then step T is about stepping into the transformation. And so a lot of times people may want to think in a different way, but to get real results, we have to genuinely embody the transformation, the change.
Makes sense. Makes sense. We're changing identities of sorts in this case.
To happy, healthy, beautiful. Yep. Getting a self-image that feels good and loving. Because that's the thing is that as people love their self-image and feel good about them, their self-image, that also helps bring in natural feelings of self-love. And so there's key pieces that are important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So raising the energetic vibe there as well. Now, incorporating the gift, you know, like you're talking about gift, I'm guessing you're talking about this in your book.
Yeah.
And book is meant, like, how do you envision folks using the book? How would they sit down with the book? How would they consume it? What's your vision for it? How does it work?
Well, this is what's really cool. So the book part one is basically the research that I found and how it makes, like, and everybody's even just as I read it, they go, oh my gosh, this makes so much sense. And so that's what I love. Also, it talks about energy of the body and how it's not just a woo-woo concept, that it is actually in top hospitals and it's top research hospitals are actually analyzing energy of the body. And so it shares that as well, that it is hidden research and it is there more than people realize. And then also talks about emotions and how our mindset can affect our energy, et cetera. And so there's that. And then part two is that step-by-step process of the gift method that takes people through understanding emotions and how to use them and how to shift them. And, you know, when we stop and look at it, our culture really does not understand emotions and mindset. You know, we have so many people that are struggling with depression or negativity or you know, just wounding. And there's so many, there's tricks to it. There's tricks to it that when you really understand emotions, they work a lot different than most people realize. And so when we start to understand how they work, it makes it easier to be happy, to create these changes. And so part of, you know, and what I do with working with people under medical equipment is part of it is identifying the issue. The other part is understanding emotions in a completely different way.
I think that's a hanging up point for a lot of people about the emotions, because we really don't, you know, one, we're kind of taught in a lot of cases to stuff them down, right? Or not talk about them, you know, and so trying to figure them out and really figure what are their purpose. I find that that's a sticking point for a lot of folks. How long did it take you to really explore the emotions and start to see their purpose?
I mean, I would say, I mean, that's an interesting question. And the reason that is because, so I was completely healed by 2010. Okay. So at this point I've been healed now for 14 years. And I would say that healing myself was one thing. And then understanding all of the different ways that emotions work was then another thing. And Because, I mean, obviously, I don't have all the negative emotion. I didn't have all the negative emotions in the world.
Sure, sure.
And understanding it, because everybody's mindset is different. And then so you start to find common patterns and threads and things that don't even, that seem so counterintuitive. And I mean, to give an example, one is this, is that let's say somebody is constantly having fearful thoughts. They're constantly having fearful thoughts. And a lot of times in our culture, we'd say, look, just focus on the positive. Stop worrying all the time. Stop worrying. Okay. However, a lot of times what I've found is that, let's say somebody has a sense of feeling like a bad person or feeling guilty, even if they didn't do anything. Yeah. They can feel guilty, like they did something wrong. And in which case, it creates a subconscious feeling that they deserve punishment. So then the brain will say, well, this bad thing can happen. This bad thing can happen. This, or let's say somebody subconsciously is wanting more love and they have love linked up to sympathy. Well, then what do they need to have happen? For them to get love, they need to have something bad happen. So then the brain is going, well, what if this bad thing and this bad thing? So the mind works different than we think it is. And a lot of times we're chasing what we think, but we're not understanding the wiring of the brain. And I would say that has been a really key component in helping people to get results.
So. Gotcha. And so I'm guessing in your book, you've got some details as to how folks can kind of unravel what might be going on within them personally. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's prompts and questions. And then not only that, but hey, this gets miswired. So it gives categories and saying, hey, this, yeah, check. Yeah. So it's there.
Okay. Okay. And so then once we identify, we kind of got like, okay, I know what my issue is. I know it's connected to, say, neck pain. I'm just going to throw that one out there just because you have the good images of the upper neck. Then the going about releasing it in yourself. What's that last kind of step that you practice onto with the connection with the emotion and the pain? What's the practice there?
With the emotion and the pain. I would say it's genuinely rewiring the emotion. And not just, I would say that there are a lot of misconceptions here also. A lot of times people will try to pretend like emotions aren't there when they still are. So the emotion genuinely has to be gone, rewired, seeing it from a different perspective, but genuinely feeling differently about it. And a lot of times in our culture, people will say things like this. They'll say, you know, maybe they had a hurt or a wound. And they'll say, well, I forgave the person. But that doesn't make it gone. I mean, that's a lot like if I open the refrigerator and somebody opens a refrigerator, there's old food in the refrigerator. They say, I forgive you. And then they shut the door. Is the food gone? Well, it is not gone, but it's forgiven. And so, but it doesn't make it gone until it's really gone. So you no longer feel that way at all. That's when it's gone.
Okay, got it. We're just wiring ourselves to think in a different direction so that we're not going to run down that pathway over and over.
Yeah, we can't still feel in the same way.
Gotcha. It's really about becoming a whole different person, really, when we get down to it.
You know, yes. And I mean, it depends. It really depends. Okay. So I have worked with people who it's kind of like this. I've like one woman who went through my course who was bedridden for about 8 years. Is now she's running. She's great. She'd fly anywhere. She's amazing. And she even just looks like a different person. I mean, she went from feeling like looking it just, she just looks alive and full of, like, she just looks like radiates beauty. And it's so funny to see the contrast of the pictures. And that happens in some cases. But I would say if somebody has a really life-changing illness, then yes, I would say other times, you know, if somebody has neck pain or back pain or, you know, foot pain or whatnot, yes, it changes their emotions, but they don't become a whole different person. It's just, So, I mean, it really, it really depends on how long a person has been injured. And so that's, I mean, literally, I mean, somebody could have anger going on, anger and guilt, and maybe they have anger and guilt, and then they let that go. And it had nothing to do with their identity, and they just had anger and guilt, and they let it go, and they've healed it, and they've moved on, you know? I mean, if you think about it with these, like with these cases, and even on my website, there's a video of a woman who was, had neck pain, and it took like 15 minutes to help her release her pain, and it never came back. And I think that video is like 8 years old. Oh, wow. And her pain never came back, and she embodied the change. Now, is she a whole, did she change into a whole different person? Yes. And so it's part of the reason that I call this the gift method. And the reason I call it the gift method is this, is, you know, if you think about somebody, let's say there's a woman who has been criticizing herself, and she's criticizing herself, and she spends the next 50 years of her life or 100 years of her life criticizing herself, and what that looks like in her relationships or her work or who she becomes and how she feels about herself. But let's say this emotion's been affecting her health, and she says, okay, I have to heal myself, and she changes it. And now instead she feels self-love and feels self-confidence and good about herself. And what that looks like for the next 5, 10, 20, 50 years of her relationships and feeling good about herself and confident and what she does in life and how she feels and how much she enjoys life. I mean, so yes, it becomes pivotal. I mean, did she need to change her identity in that case? So it depends on the person. It depends on how much it's ingrained. But that's why I call it the gift method, is because the way I see it is a few things. First and foremost, it becomes a life-changing gift, but also from a spiritual level, it's like if we're driving in a car and if the check engine light comes on, it's telling us that there's a problem. Mm-hmm. And similarly, I feel like health issues are that check engine light. It's telling us, hey, something is off in your way of feeling and thinking. There's something that's off that's causing problems in hurt or pain or something or holding you back in life. And as you change that, you change your life. So it becomes a life-changing gift.
That's huge. That is huge. I know now that a lot of people, you know, having listened to this podcast are like, okay, yes, I want to see your website. I want to look at your book. Let's share with folks how they can get a hold of you. Of course, we'll talk about Master Your Mind and Energy to Heal Your Body. Where can they find that? Give us a scoop.
Absolutely. My website is brandygilmore.com. And I believe there's going to be a link below. So yep. They can link right to it. And so there's that. My book is anywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes and Noble. And it's pretty amazing to just even seeing it. And I just want to emphasize that I make this look really easy. As you can tell, there's some complexities, and mm-hmm. also it's so cool. It's so amazing that we have, you know, we know stress affects the physical body. And when we really start to look at these patterns and the awareness of what we can do with our minds, it's just incredible.
I agree. It's fascinating. I'm glad that you're sharing all of your hard work with us and just giving us a taste of what we can do with our own bodies. Gosh, Brandy, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story, your book, and all of the magical things you are doing with folks. This is impressive.
Thank you so much. And Janine, thank you for what you're doing. And I love your heart, and you're just beautiful. So thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure.
Hey, fellow health junkie, thanks for listening to the Health Fix podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please help support me to get the word out about the podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review, and just get that word out. Thanks again for listening.